Good afternoon, Jamie.
Good afternoon, man. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. I know we always talk about the weather because we're Midwest people and that's what we do, but yeah, it's actually warmer right now than it has been. So it's nice. Just took a walk.
Screw
with
this
the
weather, dude. Screw
back
this
in weather. You don't like spring? That's your thing.
I love spring, but it's not spring. It's the faux spring. It's tricking you, dude. We got 2 months left of this crap. Get 2 months.
Dude, I will take 2 months of 60 degree weather and be okay with that.
Not when you're on an e-bike, man.
That's true. Yeah, I don't e-bike enough.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, otherwise things are going good besides the lack of e-bike in my life.
Yeah. That's a big thing, man. It's a big thing. Yeah.
How about you?
It's been okay. Had a rough couple of weeks. Not out of the woods yet, man. It's just, so my productivity has not been where I want it to be. Just a lot of like lost interest and like try and get motivated.
Oh, imagine that.
Yeah.
Lost interest in a project that is coming along quite nicely for a while.
Well, just lost interest in general and just programming. So
gotcha.
Trying to get that back. So I've been taking more breaks than normal to get away from my computer, but I'm kind of like at a spot where like, I don't know what, like, have you ever done this? Like, I don't know what to do if I'm not working, like in the winter, like I don't have like other stuff or games.
I'm like, I don't lack for hobbies. I have a bajillion hobbies that I just can't put enough time into. So that's where I'm at.
All my hobbies though involve like being nice out, and that's really never the case in Toledo. So yeah, I gotta find some new.
You gotta find an indoor hobby.
Yeah. My indoor hobby is usually programming.
Does anybody in your family play ping pong? I don't know if it's
you
have I ever done the PSA
pong.
Of like endorsing ping pong as a hobby? Because
no, we went to the ping pong bar though. Remember the ping pong?
I know,
pong
and
bar.
I dominated.
Did you not? No, you were too
I literally
to
won every game that
you
I played.
Too scared to play the. Yeah, you played against me.
I know. I played against you, everybody at One Design, and I played against probably the weakest member of like the regulars at the ping pong bar.
Dude, there's some sweaty regulars there.
They were pretty sweaty. And they were good. Like, I was like, I definitely wouldn't have returned that serve. When I was watching them, I was like, yep, I'm not hitting that
like,
back.
Yeah, they were like 4 feet off the table. It's like Olympics. It's like four scump over there.
Yeah, it was fun to watch. Like, yeah, was they were cool playing place, doubles dude. At one point, too. It was pretty neat. Yeah.
Never been to a ping pong bar after that or before.
No, this is the one and only time that I've been to a ping pong bar. We have, I don't know if Toledo has these. We have like an outdoor park that has concrete ping pong tables.
Oh, that's cool.
Have you seen these?
No, those would get spray painted in like 2 days.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah, they're, they exist, but I look at them and I go, I'm not playing outside. Dude, the ping pong balls are way too susceptible to wind. Like that screws everything up.
For sure. What are you supposed to bring your own paddle and balls?
Well, yeah, of course. I mean, it's kind of like an outdoor chess board, you know? Like you're supposed to be bring your own pieces, I assume. I've never lived in a city that did that, but
I assume there's some locker you can.
But yeah, so anywho, this is my encouragement to anybody that needs an indoor hobby is just play ping pong, because ping pong is not an outdoor sport. I'll tell you that right now.
Yeah.
But you do need a lot of room. So like, don't finish a basement and dedicate the entire thing to ping pong. So you have enough room.
Yeah, I'm not into the ping pong, man. I'm not into the ping pong.
Alternative. So
I'm not doing ping pong. I'm not doing ping pong. You're not going to force ping pong on me.
Foosball. You ever thought about foosball?
Have you ever played?
Table is smaller.
Pickleball? Pickleball is fun. Again, an outdoor thing.
Yeah, it is an outdoor thing. Yeah, I've not played pickleball. I've heard about it. I'm friends with like a person who's like a champion in Florida, I guess. But
how old are they?
He's the average age, which is like he's like 75.
Yeah. We have like a really super nice like pickleball court by us, and sometimes I took my bike there and rode with my wife, and we play pickleball. And yeah, we were probably the youngest people there, but it is fun. It is fun. It's funny because everybody treats it like you're playing tennis. I'm like, it's not really that hard to like move around the court and get to the ball. Anyway, pickleball's fun. But
there's a weird tangent there, but our sports tangent. But okay, so you lost motivation in doing programming related things, but you have nothing else.
No.
So that does put you in a weird spot. Do you just watch a lot of Netflix?
I watched paintball all weekend. Did you watch paintball? Mm.
I didn't get a message that was like, paintball's on. You watching paintball? I
have not. Well, it was the first term of the series. First term of the year, man. I mean, after all the big mix-ups, you know? Latin Saints. You got the Latin Saints mix-ups. Coming in. My Lord. So many.
Like if I took a part of the podcast and I was like, this is Keith's eSports Corner. I'm just going to drop it right here. He's the only one who cares about competitive Halo, but here you go. You should
be watching paintball. That's all I'm saying. Yeah.
Okay, whatever. All right. Well, do you want to hear about my week? A couple weeks?
Yes.
I have a couple topics. Do you have any topics you want to talk about, even though you lost some motivation?
Sure. Sure.
All right. Well, then I will let you go first, and then I'll pick up with my stuff.
Okay. Well, I did work on Tetsu a bit, and I got kind of the onboarding. I'm still working with the onboarding flow and got that working so that you can kind of start setting up a new channel inside just right within Slack. So it's right now I got asking, you know, do you want to create a new channel or use an existing channel for your meetings? And then set up a default meeting when they select that stuff. So that needed a bunch of kind of work behind the scenes as far as like sending messages and receiving messages from Slack. So I had to build some things into Juve. That was a lot of work, but that's done. And the next thing I started working on is actually starting a stand-up. So now they have their meeting kind of set up, they can start it. So that's what I'm going to work on this next week.
Nice. So you fixed the DSL problem where you couldn't have more than one thing in the router, like block?
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yes. Yeah.
Yeah. That was where we left off. We had the macro problem where you couldn't have more than one thing within a block.
Yes. And I fixed that pretty easily, actually. It just sat down and I was doing everything right. I just wasn't doing things in the right order. So that... But yeah, all the meta programming stuff is turned around, and that all.
So, do you have like an unquote in the wrong spot? Is that basically what happened?
No, it was just the way I was aggregating the actions for a platform. It wasn't really even a meta programming thing. I thought it was, and I was trying to get fancy with the meta programming stuff. But really, all you need to do is unquote a block and have that block and pass into that context of that block the stuff that you already have. So the platform in this case, and I wasn't passing that in. But anyway. So yeah, that got fixed. So now in Juve, it supports command routes and action routes. So anytime you click a button, select a menu thing, whatever, that's called an action route.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah. It's pretty sweet, man. The code like that's actually in Tetsu is real, real slim and nice. So, did a lot. Dude, Ecto in Elixir is so badass. It's so good. So good. I had to create like a whole bunch of like transactions and just their Ecto.multi.
It is very good.
Yeah. Modules is really good. So that's really what I did with Tetsu. I'm also working with a designer to start working with them. We talked last time about the little comic book stuff, the Wham and the Wham Bam. Wham Bam. Yeah. So, I'm excited about that. I don't know how much they're going to do, like the drawing of the stuff. Might actually hire like a artist to do that.
I love the idea that you're going to go get like a person who actually pencils comics. Yeah. Like, hey, can you pencil some stuff for me real quick? What's it for? Stand up meetings.
Yeah, it's stand up meetings in Slack. Mm-hmm. Okay, sure.
Okay, sure. You got money.
Whatever, man.
Yep.
Yeah, so that's what I've been doing. So I wanted to get farther than I was, but it is what it is, man. That's what it is. So.
Nice.
How about you?
It sounds like you accomplished the things, like you made it Yeah.
I did.
Made it through a big hurdle, and then now you're like actually utilizing the things that you've put into Juve, and it sounds like it's working pretty well for you. So that's, I would say that's good.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't do anything. No, I didn't do nothing. So,
You're also working on client work, right?
I am. And one of those projects is coming to an end. So that's good. I'm actually thinking about taking maybe a month off, just working fully on Tetsu. But
nice. Give yourself a little sabbatical.
Yeah. Just, you know, I know I can get so far. Just if this was my only project, I could have this released in like a month, you know? So, so how about you, man?
So I will start off with the coder journey stuff, because I think it's interesting. I got an email a couple weeks ago that was like, hey, you haven't done anything on YouTube in a very long time. So if you don't do anything in the next month, we're going to demonetize all of your stuff and kick you out of the YouTube partner program. And I go, okay. So I in their defense, apparently the amount of like yearly viewership hours that I had like is just below the requirement for the YouTube partner program now, which it's been trucking by itself with no new content for like 6 years. So that's
kind of,
we'll take it.
Like they force you to put like, they kind of force you on that hamster wheel of like creating content. Just kind of.
Oh yeah. Shitty. Yeah. Cause it's more stuff that would bring in more eyes to the ads that they, you know, show that you get a itty-bitty fraction of. So yeah. And they just, well, the thing that's annoying with it is they'll demonetize my stuff, but it's not like they're going to not put ads on my videos. I'm just not going to get anything for it.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's like, okay, I should probably fix this. Like, cause, and there's a, I think the best that Coder Journey was ever doing in terms of like ad revenue is it made like $300 a month or something for a little while. Mm-hmm. And which is, you know, that's fine. Like that's money that I would not have otherwise made. So like, and I literally wasn't doing anything. So that, is not too shabby, but that pays, you can like fill your gas tank on that now.
I don't know what a gas tank is. I don't have a car. And just
E-bikes. Right. Yeah. Sorry.
You can fill up your e-bike battery for 19 cents. So,
So yeah, that actually is something that's kind of lighting a fire under me to like, all right, I need to make some content, but then I go, well, what do I make content about? And so that's where we're at now with Coder Journey stuff. It's trying to figure out where to go and make content. And I think I might've talked about this a little bit recently, but it's like, I think I'm going to go back to kind of my roots and do some like Rails stuff, go back to like project-based tutorial stuff. Cause even though that doesn't get like crazy eyes on it or whatever, I'm good at it. My content still gets views and it's too old to be actually helpful. Like it's almost detrimental to people at this point. So updating that stuff would be pretty good. It lets me work on stuff that I'm actively like working on at work too. Right. Like I use Rails again. Mm-hmm. And so.
Yeah. You're actually programming.
Yeah. Getting myself back up to speed with Rails would be pretty good. Right. At this point, I actually don't work a lot. It sounds weird. I don't work a lot with Rails, even though I work in Rails just by the nature of some of the projects I've been working on.
Yeah.
Like a lot of just Ruby.
Yeah. You work at the arguably the biggest,
largest Rails shop.
Yeah. In the world. And you hardly touch Rails. That's pretty funny.
Well, it just happens to be the thing that I'm working on. So there's that. Yeah. But yeah, so that's something to kind of consider. But I'm like, okay, maybe I'll put the podcast out so I at least can put out a little bit of content. And I also, there's a thing where I have to get over the threshold of hours, otherwise they'll demonetize me. So I'm like, I almost want to put out a PSA to like all my relatives, be like, hey, you have an iPad? Just like go on YouTube and just play this really long playlist that just keeps on going. I just need like a solid 8 hours out of your iPad.
You could build you could build a bot that.
That's probably illegal. So, or goes against the terms.
I'm sure asking family members would also go against their terms.
Well, it's a good thing I didn't actually do that. I was just joking.
Yeah.
So that was that's a thing. So I'm hopeful that maybe if I release something, it'll up my Google juice a little bit, because I only need like a couple extra hours out of the given month.
A couple hits.
Yeah. So that's something. But one of the things I think I might go on is just like, I want to do a whole series on design patterns for object oriented stuff, because what I've kind of found working where I'm working at Shopify, like on the team that I'm on and in the area of the code base that I'm in, is like design patterns aren't even at like a big, you know, prolific programming shop, aren't necessarily well known. Like, and there are many opportunities where like the problem would be solved if we exercised a pattern that already exists for doing certain things. Mm-hmm. Or the other thing happens where people use the wrong pattern mm-hmm. in a scenario, right? Like running into some code in this area right now where it's like we use the value object pattern a lot without actually really understanding what a value object does. And also in Ruby, value objects aren't super duper useful a lot of times. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Like every object is effectively a value object if you define the equals method. Like value yeah. objects are made for the sake of comparison. And in our case, we used them as like a way to separate a model from the database, basically, yeah. right? Like we're yeah. like, oh, it's a, this is our value object. It's just a value. I'm like, your model can be that. Mm-hmm. Like if you're doing comparisons and you need like fancy comparison, which is what a value object is for, then go ahead and do that. But in this case, it's like, we're using the wrong pattern. So,
yeah, I mean that they already are, right? Like active record objects are anyway, like,
yeah, I'm, yeah, exactly.
But equal active record object is just their IDs match. I'm pretty sure. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
But by acknowledging like these patterns exist, they solve problems that come up frequently in situations, usually in object-oriented programming, right? I'm sure there are functional design patterns too that I just am unfamiliar with because I haven't worked in like functional scape long mm-hmm. enough to dig into that stuff. But it's like I'm trying to kind of prioritize the object-oriented design patterns to figure out how I want to make these videos and in what order so that I get the important ones out first, right? And like I would be interested to get kind of your take on this. What's your level of familiarity with design patterns? Like how often do you use your mind come to them? Yeah, I mean, lot, I know you yeah. know them. I don't know if you're like, oh, I would definitely use the flyweight pattern for this. I've literally never used the flyweight pattern, by the way.
I know when like certain patterns are used. And so what I usually do is when I recognize that situation, then I usually go and I look it up or I mm-hmm. you know, like that's a good Google search, you know, like how to implement, yep. you know. So, yeah, I use them pretty regularly. You know, I'm a computer science major, mm-hmm. so I think I feel like I kind of lean towards them more than a lot of people. Yeah, so I think that would be great, man. I think a series of that, you know, just a collection of those would be great. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's what I want to do. Is I want to just make a library of them to where it's mm-hmm. like, you want to know about what the factory pattern is? Mm-hmm. Let me show you. Like yep. I might even show you in like multiple different languages to show you like it actually appears a little bit differently depending on the language that mm-hmm. you're using mm-hmm. and that kind of thing. And I'm debating on these, like if I want to make this.
You don't even really need it in this type of language. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Bingo. Language, like, you don't really, yeah. That's where I'm like value objects in XYZ language. Like you don't need it. Yeah. Like they're much more common in Java, you know, for instance, like there are actually a lot of these design patterns that you, when I look at it in Ruby, you just go, oh, we don't use this.
Yeah.
Just in general, ever, this never comes up. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so there's that. That I think is probably the direction I want to go for like my first Back to Coder Journey series. So do you want to workshop some, these are the design patterns I should cover first list? Like do you want to try to give me the important ones? Like let's, the ones that always come to mind for me are factory, template. Oh, let's see here. Factory template, singleton.
Useful. And Ruby it's big. Yeah, yeah.
So those three factory.
What's the fuck? Ah, dang it. I forgot the name.
Yeah, see, coming up with the name sometimes is hard. And I always have to forget the difference between a factory and a builder.
Oh yeah, I don't know what that. I mean, I would assume a factory. I don't know what maybe I have used builder pattern before based on. Yeah,
that might actually not be a real pattern. It might be one of those ones where it's like goes by a different name and like it is actually just the factory pattern.
I remember seeing though, maybe in a Gang of Four book or something like.
I mean, that's where the pattern factor, the pattern, like the patterns all come from the Gang of Four, right? Yeah, like that's where they originated. Yeah. They don't all come from there, but that's where they originated effectively.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that sounds great. I wonder also if YouTube is like the correct. I could also see like, you know, Instagram shorts or whatever they call them. Like, well, I know there's YouTube shorts, but I could see, like, you know, more succinct 1 minute, 2 minute videos of people that just want to, like, they Google, you know, what is factory pattern? And you know,
that's an interesting, I don't have any sort of Instagram presence at all. No. I mean, I barely have a Twitter presence, so there's that, but
but I could see like a more condensed version, because like YouTube has their shorts, which annoy the crap out of me, but you know, that might be a nice little way to get more users looking at your stuff.
That's a good idea. I think I might, instead of making it a, like, I might make it like a glossary on Coder Journey instead of making it like a blog post per tutorial, like I've done in the past, where it would be like, we're building authentication into a Rails app. And it's like a whole blog post of like text-based stuff and a video. And so I think what I might do for design patterns is I might like come up with a really succinct way to teach a design pattern through like a short video. And then also like have the definition and maybe like an expandable code snippet and just put those all on like one page. So you can just like find what you're looking for and like, one specific area of my website, just to have a little bit more, I don't know, Google juice, for lack of a better term there.
Yeah. But I think that I also wonder if you want to show this as in like a refactoring way, or like a, you know, greenfield creation way, if that makes sense. Ooh,
that's a good idea. Yeah, I could.
Maybe both ways. You know what I mean? Cause it's like, it's very helpful to like see code and realize like, oh, like, let's take, for example, you have a list, like a case statement or like five if statements, right? And it says, if, you know, type equals blah, 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 then create blah, blah, blah. If type, you know, and then you can look at that and say, oh, actually a factory pattern would be good here. Or do you teach it like, hey, this is a factory pattern, this is how you create it, and then these are situations where you might identify where it's useful. You know, that might be a better way. I don't know.
That sounds great, actually. Yeah. Like what So if I'm looking, I'm thinking about this as the YouTuber's mindset, right? Like the things that have done well for me in the past. My most successful video of all time has almost 600,000 views on it, is basically an animated presentation on what is Kubernetes and how Kubernetes works. It's literally me whipping stuff up in Keynote and like people really, which taught me a thing actually. And that is, don't put words on slides. And simple animations and imagery teach people way faster than you putting words on slides.
That's literally my presentations.
That's how I present
things. I have one word on a slide or two words.
Like it's, I don't use bullet points almost ever. And like, if I can make a slide or like a slideshow that has literally no words, then I'm like, yeah, buddy. Or it's just like a title of the slide, so you can kind of get the concept of what's
going on. It's just all magic move. It's just all
Magic Move is brilliant for this. Like it would, honest to God, is so good, because you can use Magic Move to simulate actually knowing how to animate things. And
until you need to refactor that thing. And you're like, oh, I forgot this one little step.
Yeah, well, there's no refactoring a YouTube Magic video. Move. So But so I think I might do a like factory pattern, you know, whatever. And then maybe I'll do like another video, like that would be tied to each one of these things, that is like refactoring to the XYZ pattern. And that would be the one where I'm like in the code and I just link from the tutorial, like the explainer video, to the practice video. And I think that would be good. Gives me a little cross traffic, you know, on those sort of things, but additionally keeps it separate. So like, if somebody wants to see like, this is how the sausage is actually made versus this is how it works. This is the rubber meeting the road. I think that's a great idea.
I like how you switched from two different.
I bailed out on the sausage.
Yeah, you went. You bailed out on the sausage making. Went to the
rubber on the road. Title. I bailed on the sausage making.
So one question I have, though, is like, if I thought that a lot of your viewers were, you know, kind of DevOpsy.
Well, so this is weird, right? There's a dichotomy between my viewership. What I am is not my target audience. Is very interesting. The bulk of my viewership.
Well, you are a white male, I'm assuming.
True. Well, actually, you know what? I think the majority of my viewership comes from India.
Nice.
But
you're big in India. Title.
Huge. But the Yeah. So the bulk of my viewership comes from DevOps stuff, like namely Kubernetes, but the next highest thing is React. Actually, my React tutorial from years and years ago when I was just learning React originally in like 2016 is still pretty popular. And relatively speaking, obviously not popular enough to keep me as a YouTube partner right now, but it's also out of date, right? Like also,
probably on like React 8 or something. So that might be a good, you know, when you're saying multiple languages, everybody freaking is clamoring for JavaScript content. So that might be a good idea to put in multiple languages, because then you're not getting, you know, just the Rubyists, just the whatever they call JSers. Or just, you know, whatever language is there. Because
Exactly. I don't want to pigeon my whole myself to a language. And if I can find distinct differences between different flavor. Yes.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. I like it, man. Coder Journey's back. Now, you've said Coder Journey's back a couple times.
I know. If you look at my YouTube channels, like videos and like most recent, it's like, I'm back, baby. And then a year later, it's like, back. It's not exactly the most trustworthy thing. It's very much a boy who cried wolf situation.
Yeah.
But I would love to make this something that I can come back to. And I think it would be good if there are things that pop up in my work, working with like a lot of other engineers, to be like, okay, this is something I could actually educate somebody on and, you know, get it out there.
I love to see, because the unique thing about like your job is, you know, the scale that you see, I think, like a lot of people don't see. So I'd love to see like scaling issues videos. Also, I meant to bring this up when you're talking about design patterns, but being able to handle loops and iterations of stuff. And like, I feel like there's a lot of the code that I see that is bad is people looping over stuff and doing stuff with inside those loops. I think there's a lot of like, quote unquote, not design patterns, but there's a way that you can break those things down that would make better code, if that makes sense. So I think like a lot of like, with your design patterns, I think handling like data, transforming data, looping over stuff. I think those would help a lot as well.
When you're saying you see people do bad things with loops, are you talking like they do too many things inside of the body of a loop?
Yeah, inside of a loop, they're changing state all over the place. They have like extra variables, like integer equals zero, and like, you know, and it's, you know, if integer is mod, you know, 10, 2, you know, so yeah, there's just a lot of people don't know about map, you know, compared to a for loop, you know? So I think there's just a lot of like the iterators, the enumerables, the enumerators, like a lot of that stuff I still think could be, there's a lot of room for improvement in code.
Man, around there's those, so much of this sort of stuff that's like would make good short form content where you're just like, oh, you want like the rundown on the two most prolific like enumerable methods, map and reduce, right? Like you want to understand what is map reduce? Like, here you go. It's map and reduce. I think that would be great. And those would be, I actually think I did this one time when I was at, did I teach about map when I was at Linux Academy? I had a slide that was like animated in a pretty neat way to kind of explain it.
A magic move?
Dude, I magic move the crap out of it. But yeah, that's, I mean, actually I was forced into using Keynote PowerPoint for a period. So I had to use whatever their equivalent of magic move was. I don't remember though. I had to figure it out though, because I was missing my secret sauce.
It was definitely not magic.
No.
Yeah, that sounds cool, man.
Nice.
I'm excited.
I do still actually have some other things I was going to talk about, but we took a long enough time to talk about Coder
Journey. Let's do it. We're good. Nobody's listening anyway.
Yeah, that's true. What was I going to talk about? So, I think this is goes back to Keith's at a big company now and doesn't know how to handle certain things. And that is the idea of people needing to approve my work is very new to me. Not like pull requests, but like the thing I want to build and needing to go like through iteration over iteration of like me trying to explain a concept, like this is what I'm doing. Like, here's my tech doc, which is like the note describing the problem and the thing I want to do for my solution. Here's the tech design, which is like a, literally how I'm going to do it. And me going, I hate this. It has been a very interesting process. Like, I didn't realize how much aversion I have to big upfront design.
Yeah.
Until now. Really, where I go, this just feels like too much. I'm like, I like am such a weird programmer, I think, maybe in my own mind, where I'm just like hand waving. I'm like, unimportant, unimportant, unimportant. We can punt on that decision, doesn't matter. Like, there's so many of these things that I go, I've never run into this before. And like, obviously this works. Like, what we're doing works. We wouldn't have gotten to where we got inside of Shopify if this didn't work. But not my favorite.
Like can you give an example of like,
So the thing that I'm working on right now, right, is essentially we have a service that like isn't public right now. Like, the API isn't from the public. It goes through like a proxy, and that's a problem for us at the moment. So I'm making our service now publicly accessible. Publicly, like it'll be accessible to like specific business partners, basically. And so I'm like, yeah, cool. This isn't hard. I'm going to switch over some auth stuff. To using OAuth versus a different based auth that we're doing, because this integrator already knows how to use that. So I'm like, sweet, that's cool too. Like, it literally took me 35 minutes to come up with my game plan for this. It took me a day to spike out the entire solution, like a prototype of it. Taking me 2.5 weeks to get to write a tech note describing what I was doing and get people to approve it. And before
Why do you have to write a tech note on code that you wrote? Like, can't they just see the code?
Well, the code that I wrote is just a prototype, so I'm not shipping that. I will write it differently, probably, in the grand scheme of things. It's more like a quick, it's basically a spike, right? Like, I spiked it out. I actually had tests in there, so like, it's a pretty good prototype. But yeah, so that was like my proof of concept to be like, okay, this will work. Here are the things we need to do. Here's some considerations. Like, I document all the stuff. I'm like, ta-da, here's what I want to do. And like, that got approved. And then now it's like, I have another, there's like the tech, what is it? The design doc. And I'm like, how is this different? This is the same thing. Like, except for you're just making me give you more details on this, which you should not need to care about. It's an implementation detail. Yeah. Like, so yeah, it's yeah, been, that doesn't, yeah, it's doesn't been an interesting,
mean, that doesn't, those two things like don't jive. Like, the fact that Shopify does that is kind of weird.
Well, I think it's based on team too, like team to team section of the organization and that kind of stuff. We have a lot of freedom to do things. We have general structures for how we go through things, right? Like, you propose a project, anybody can propose a project. It goes into the prototype phase if it's approved. Once you have a prototype, you do these sort of things and you get it into build phase.
Who's this room of approvers?
They tend to be technical stakeholders within whatever wing of the organization you're in. So like director of engineering on this particular project would be the guy who's like, yes, this is approved. We need to be consistent because of XYZ. Like, that was all the approval took to get into prototype. To get into build, like, I've had to go through and have like staff developers and dev leads, and like, everybody's on this side of the house is technical. Even management is very technical. So like, they can all review what I'm trying to say here. And there's been good feedback along the way, but it's like just taking a lifetime to do. And it's been an interesting exercise. I'm like, okay, I need to temper my expectations on how fast things can move. Because like me, one of my old coworkers from Squaremouth works with me too. And he and I have such a weird perspective on velocity compared to what is kind of expected from Shopify. Like, we move very fast, and to the point of like, we're just like, if we're not shipping like multiple things a day, almost, it feels like we're not doing anything, where that can be a total normal stance in the flow of a project at Shopify. And it feels a little weird. Like, we ship tons of stuff. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, there's boatloads of shipping going on, but like, on our individual level, things can feel a lot slower. And I'm trying to temper my my expectations on how fast I should be able to move and how much change I can create and how much impact I can have in a given time frame. And it's been very weird. So that was more of a rant, less of a conversation, but
it's still very weird to me because like that's coming from Shopify, like big upfront design stuff. Like maybe
it feels big upfront to me, but I think it's because I've never had an approval process for my technical design.
Well, like your technical design is just, you don't know all those pieces beforehand.
This is what I tell everybody. I go, I literally don't know less than I know right now. Yeah, like every single time.
I don't get like why for a company that has built Shopify, it's just weird. Like, one time I went in for this interview, it reminds me of this, like anytime I think of big upfront design, I went into this interview and they wanted me to build like a time tracking application. Mm-hmm. They basically wanted me to build Harvest in an afternoon, which is fine. Mm-hmm. But like, they're like, hey, the database guy is going to come by at 10 a.m. and look at your beta database design. I was like, well, I don't have, like my database design is going to evolve as I'm
Yeah, migrations are a thing. Like, I'm allowed to change what this looks like.
And it's like, no, this is what we do. We design the database first. I was like, no, I'm good, man. See ya.
And like, there are certain constraints like that I do see come up occasionally that make sense. Like at Shopify scale, some of those things you do need to do because
but you don't need to do those up front though. Like,
yeah, not all of them. Yeah. I mean, there are certain things where you need to know what you're going to do because there are certain points where you're like,
with this thing over here and we want
to, and somebody's going to come by and tell you like, actually this is physically impossible. That database table is so large that if you add another column, it's going to brick the entire system. Like it literally, you cannot do that migration. Like it will not work. Mm-hmm. And like, there'd be something like that would come up from this where I would be like, oh, good to know.
Yeah.
Like, you know, occasionally, but that's like, you wouldn't have to spell it out. Like this is going to be my exact thing. You'd be like, I want to add a column to whatever and do the thing. And somebody'd be like, nope, that's not going to work. Yeah. And so, yeah, it's a weird situation. And I don't think, like, what I'm describing is not that big upfront, right? Yeah. Like, we dig into more. I think this actually might come from having too many stakeholders. Like, there were just too many people who wanted to chime in and give their two cents on what I was building. And so, like, my first, there were like seven people who I was like, you're probably a stakeholder on this kind of thing. And so I had to get a ton of feedback from people. And thankfully, I mean, a lot of them were just like, check, 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 check. And some of them were like, I am technically a stakeholder, but I don't have a ton of context around this area of the system. So can you please verify XYZ things? And the nature of asynchronous work made it a little bit slower, maybe. It was a weird experience. So I just wanted to, I guess, talk about that. I also kind of give like the grass is always greener sort of situation, right? Like every job has annoying aspects to it. Like, or things that you don't necessarily like. Like, I think a lot of programmers get this mindset that like, I couldn't work at Shopify because, you know, it's a huge company, big scale, world-class, right? I don't deal with scaling issues like as a thing, right? That's the production engineers kind of are the ones who are like, this is going to be a problem kind of thing. Like occasionally there'll be things that come up in my code, but like, I don't think I've ever written a piece of code that's like, yeah, dude, if you actually ship this, then it would break our entire system because it's so poorly written, like for scale. All right. Yeah. If you're just doing general good design, like a lot of times scale kind of falls out of that, or you're doing things that aren't at least hurting it.
Yeah.
Don't get a lot of like, you know, N cubed, space-time complexity stuff. If you're writing, you know, good code most of the time, like if you're, like there's nothing weird going on there. So yeah, it's been interesting though. Like it'll be cool when I can actually ship this project. And a couple of the comments have made me like rethink some of the things I didn't know. And it might also be a thing where I'm working on, like, I'm the champion of a project where I'm not actually on the team. Like I'm not on the team that originally built this thing or the team that's going to maintain it. I have a little bit of context on some of the implementation detail more so than anybody on the team does. Mm-hmm. And so I was kind of the de facto person for this, but it's one of those things where it's like, people are asking questions and I have to go like figure it out kind of situation. But at the end of the day, my gut instinct has been right on every single one of them. So like, I was like, oh, cool. There we go.
Yeah.
But
cool.
Yeah. So
yeah, that sounds like, not shipping as fast as you want sounds like to me sounds like a bad thing over time. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like just the frustrations, but yeah, hopefully
this might also be the fact that this is my first time leading the project. Mm-hmm. Like it's my first time being the one who has to see it. Like every other time it's like I worked on the prototype, somebody else worked on the doc and getting all the things through review. And then I got to work on the implementation. We were just cranking stuff out.
Yeah.
But this one is like from start to finish, like I had to go through and do all the stuff. And it's like, the first part, like prototyping and stuff, I'm great at. Like I can figure out a problem at its core, go in and like implement the like initial fix for something super fast. Like
it's
superpower of mine. If I was going to give myself like what thing are you really good at as a programmer? I'm like, I'm good at the first draft. Like, but yeah, I don't know. I think that's probably where this comes from. And I'm not trying to deter anybody from working at Shopify. This is awesome. I get like, I feel like I get smarter most days.
Yeah.
Right. Some days I'm looking at a Google Doc trying to get people to just give me a green circle on some stuff. And those days I don't feel like I'm getting smarter.
I worked at a place in Detroit where it was like my first like job. We had so many like real job that I worked with, like really smart people. There's so many smart people that I still talk to today. And all of us quit because we never shipped. Like they never shipped. Like we would ship, but then there was some issue or some requirement or something wasn't completely there. And so we'd take another 2 months and implement this other change. And just the time of like not shipping, just everybody's like, this sucks. Like we're building all this stuff and nobody's seeing it. Like, and everybody left. So yeah, like not shipping stuff can be a big problem for some more. I'm not saying Shopify has this problem, obviously.
No,
that's just a red flag that can lead to bad things. So cool, man.
Well, all righty. Well, this has been a good episode. I feel like we got to talk about plenty of things. Thank you for your assistance on the future of Coder Journey. I actually
am
much more excited about this stuff now than when I was just like on paper, like I'm going to talk about some design patterns.
I can't wait till YouTube sends me a push notification. Says Coder Journey has got a new video.
Yeah, well, the first one will probably be me putting this video on Coder Journey just so I can be like, Google, see, I did it. I did it, Google.
Yep.
It's fine. Yep. But then Google. After that, there will be real content. So
My user ID is, so just go ahead and send me some of that money.
Just go ahead and crank it right on over there. All right, sounds good, man. I will talk in, let's see here. Are we talking in 2 weeks?
Yep.
Okay, you shouldn't be on vacation. I will be back from vacation, so we should be good to do this in 2 weeks.
Rock on, dude.
Sounds good.
All right, man.
Bye.
Bye.